Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Lamed Aleph. And we are at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Lamed Amud Beit, starting from HaShochet Shnei Roshim Ke'echad. Now, if Richie would have made it here on time, he would have been given the Mishnah to introduce, but I guess that adrenaline kept him up the whole night. Okay. Hopefully you'll catch up. HaShochet Shnei Roshim Ke'echad. So remember we talked about before, what would be the din if you have two korbanos that you're shechting, one standing next to the other, and you do the shechita with one movement. So you actually shecht both heads at once. This was only a problem, remember, l'chatchila, when it came to kachim, because we had that drasha, tizbachehu, tizbachhu, remember? But here, we're talking about kachim, and because of that, it says shkitato kshira, it's only kshira b'diavad. Truth is, if it would have been chulin, so then it would have been kosher even l'chatchila. Nobody's b'chayiv to shecht only one at a time. And we're going to see some pretty clever knife work over here if you're talking about, oh man, I mean, you think that apple on the boy's head was a problem. Look at this, but we'll get there. Don't try it at home, though. Shchita
Tokshir. Tell.
Shnayim, yes, thank you. Shnayim ochazim basakin v'shochatim. Two people can hold a knife and shech together. Okay, we discussed that yesterday. And as I mentioned yesterday, we've already started to talk about this Mishnah. And filu echad l'mala v'echad l'mata shechitato kishira. Well, we had some question about that. Did that mean they were holding two different knives? Or did it mean that they were holding one knife and one was on the top and one was on the bottom? And we ended up coming out that the Mishnah can even be talking about with two separate people and two separate knives. But there was certainly one das that was talking about one person. And the problem would be that it was addressing was that maybe they'll pull in different directions if it was one knife and therefore they'll do a drisa. And if it's talking about two different places, then the problem is that one will rely on the other to do rov. And maybe in the end, you didn't have rov simon. So now, if you cut off through, this is basically, was a drisa, you went through the simanim with a flash of the knife rather than cutting, but by essentially chopping it, so then it would be pasul because of drisa. But how about if you were shechting, you were not pressing, you were shechting, so you were going back and forth, and whoa, you cut off, when it says cut off the head, it means you cut through the simonim, it doesn't mean literally cut off the head, and you ended up not even moving your knife back and forth, and apparently it was so sharp, and you were doing such a good job, that it was a shechita that was without even requiring a halacha v'ava. So you just moved your knife, and boom, everything just collapses. And you find yourself, does that mean that it was, in fact, was it a drisa? Because it happened so fast? It depends. Im yesh basakim malot zavar kishirah. If the knife, now what it seems to be saying, but this is not what it means, as we will say, but what it seems to be saying is that if the knife was as long as the neck, what it really means is, if there's enough knife extending beyond the length of the neck, that it would be the entire length of the neck outside of the neck, but we'll get to that. So if the knife is long enough, so then we have enough lateral movement to the pressing drisa movement, and therefore, it would be kosher. Suppose there were two heads that you cut off with one fabulous stroke. Haya shochet vidis shnei roshim bevat achat. So then you would need in the sakin a full neck. Now, obviously, this doesn't make sense. Because said before, one neck would be okay if it was one animal. And now you say two necks and you need one neck. I mean, like what? It's from here, of course, that we're going to be medayik, that what we mean is a neck other than the necks that were shechted. That will be the only way to understand the Mishnah properly. So im yesh b'sakin malei tzavar echad, meaning beyond the two necks, so then it would be kosher. Bame devarim amurim, this is only when the knife was going in one direction. That's the point. Ayashochet, he just went in one direction. He was molich, velo evi, or evi, velo molich. It doesn't matter whether you're going forward, backwards. That's not the point. You need to be going in two directions to make a standard shchita unless you have sufficient knife length. Avol im holich ve'evi, then it doesn't matter how long your knife is. You could have an extremely short knife. As long as you're going back and forth, you could even use a filo kosher, a filo be'izmel. You could even use an izmo, which would be an awl, keshera. It would still be kosher. So we don't need it. First of all, how do we know from the beginning that shchita has to mean going back and forth? Now, obviously, we know that we have the drusa, halada, hagrama. Yeah, we have all of our halakha l'mashvi Sinai about shchita. But we're looking once again. Do we see this in a pasuk? Omer Shmuel Yomakra. Well, we had our first meeting with this pasuk, very suitable for behalotecha, where we're talking about lashon hara. And here, Yirmiyo is describing people who speak lashon hara, chetz shachut lishonam mirma diber. Their tongue is like a drawn arrow. They speak all types of lies. Others learn, tanedvei Rabbi Shmuel, the word vishachat means mashach by definition. But he brings another raya, not from chetz shachut, but rather v'chenu omer zahav shachut. So there we were talking about the gold that is drawn. Remember, for in the Aveda and making the Mishkan, we needed to have gold threads. And the only way to make gold threads that you were able to put together with the other materials in order to make the various begadim in the Beis HaMikdash or the some of the actual kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, you needed to have drawn out gold. And that was called Zahav Shachut. So there's my raya, says Rabbi Shmuel, that Vishachat means to draw out, and therefore Shechita, by definition, means to draw a knife across with a lateral motion. The Omer, and furthermore, says Rabbi Shmuel, it also says Chet Shachut Vishonam Mirma Diber. So why did Rabbi Shmuel need the Omer? Because maybe you might say that Zahav Shachut doesn't mean drawn, it means like a thread. So Zahav Shachut would mean that you have gold that is so thin that it could be spun as if it were a thread. So I want you to understand, if you put these two psukim together, you have no choice but to understand that the concept of Shachut would mean to be drawn out. Rava, havibarik legir la rebioni bar tachlifas. Now here is our own, very own William Tell. Yes, indeed. And this was Rabbi Yonah bar Tachlifa. Rabbi Yonah bar Tachlifa was quite a marksman, let me tell you. So Rava used to be bodek the arrows of Rabbi Yonah bar Tachlifa to make sure that they were kosher for shchita. The arrowhead had to be completely smooth because he would shech the birds while it was flying. And so Mimela needed to be a completely smooth arrowhead. And shachat ba'ufa ba'ade de parach. But how could he do that? Maybe the arrow had gotten in between the simonim, you know? And what about according to the shita that we had yesterday of Talmid Rav, that you have to be chayshesh even if it's under the skin? So maybe it went in under the skin. How do you know that it went in through the skin? Diomavid chaloda. Aha! We check the feathers, and the feathers are slit straight through. So obviously the arrow had come right across that throat of that bird. But wait, if it's a bird, you need kisui hadam. How in the world did he do kisui hadam when this bird was 361 meters above the ground level when it was shechted? Well, maybe you'll tell me, well, he just followed the blood, and then he went and he put dirt over the blood. No, that's not enough, you see. Because if you're doing shchita on birds or on a chaya, you have to put first loose dirt down for this purpose of kisui hadam. Then the blood falls on that, and then you cover it with additional afar, because it says v'chisahu be'afar. Note, it doesn't say v'chisahu afar. Cover, dirt should cover it. No. It should be covered inside of dirt. So you need afar lamata and afar lamala. Afar lo ne'mar ala be'afar, which means melamed, she'ashochet tzarich she'iten afar lamata v'afar lamala. Now, how the heck could he manage that? If he was shooting birds up in the sky, how would he be able to do a kisui adam? Let me tell you something, man. I mean, when you are a marksman like that, you know, they've got special sport areas for this. They put down dirt over the entire valley so that all of our William Tells can be yotze their mitzvah and practice their shrita and have lots of fun doing target practice and hunting. I mean, this is really a real safari, let me tell you. And they prepared the entire floor of that sport area. They put down Ofer Tichoach in order to be able to maybe kayim the mitzvah of Kisui Adam. So this was a kosher Lamahadrin shooting gallery. So Masbe Lofer Tikula Patka. That's pretty impressive, guys. What do you say, huh? I mean, imagine what it takes to become a marksman like that. Something. So apparently it was worth spending your time on, huh? What happened to all the learning you were going to do? I don't know. It's a big problem. They should cut out this piece from the Gemara, I'm telling you. Hayasho chet vitis. Anyway, so the Gemara goes on to say, if someone was being shochet, and then with one glorious stroke, he goes ahead and he doesn't even have to be molech mevi. He's only being molech, or he's only being mevi, and that's enough. Amar Rebbe Zera. So the Mishnah said, if you have mole tzavar, which sounded like you have the knife is as long as the neck, so then it's kosher. So Amar Rebbe Zera, it's not what it means. It means mole tzavar has to mean chutz latzavar, beyond the actual distance of the neck. But what did he mean? Did Rebbe Zera mean a little bit? Did he mean you need to have a whole neck worth of knife plus something? Is that what he was saying? Melot savar, does he mean v'chutz letzavar? Ki melot savar, did he mean a full extra neck outside of the neck? Which means, ultimately, he would need a knife that is long as double the side length of the neck, the width of the neck. Odilma melot savar, plus something or another. V'chutz letzavar mashahu. Well, look at the rest of the Mishnah. It's pretty clear, isn't it? Haya shochet v'tishnei roshim b'vatachat. Suppose he was doing shkita and he was shechting only b'holacha or only b'hava'a, so he didn't go back and forth, and he shechted two heads together. And there it says, im yesh l'sakin melot savar echad kasher. Now, how in the world? That doesn't make any sense. My melot savar echad. I mean, you can't mean that it only had one savar in toto, because if hashta b'beima achat, we just said that even a single behema needs, at the very least, melot tzavar v'chutz tzavar. So you're going to tell me b'shtei behemot you only need one? That's absurd. Ela pshita, the meaning of melot tzavar is an extra neck besides the two necks that you shechted. That's the point. Chutz l'shnei tzavarim. So that's what Rebbe Zera must have meant. I mean, melot tzavar, as long as you have a full extra neck beyond the neck that you're shechting, there would be sufficient knife length for lateral movement. That doesn't necessarily mean back and forth lateral movement. It just means there's enough movement that it wasn't a drisa. Bamet varim amurim. So, the Mishnah itself clarifies. When do we say that you need this length? So we said, anything is kosher, even an izma. Omer of Menashe, this is only talking about an izma. She'en lo karnayim. This is talking about the type of awl that doesn't have any little decorative horns, meaning they used to have this, you would extend upwards, you know, looking like a mustache. Well, then you might catch the simanim on that edge. That you can't do. As we make a gezer, we don't allow that. But since an isma is not a actual exact point, it's rounded enough. Now, the question is, of course, exactly what width of rounding? I mean, because no matter how sharp your needle is. Always, you put it under a microscope, it's going to be rounded at the bottom. So the question is, I mean, you don't have one molecule tip, you understand? So the question is, what exactly do we consider to be a small knife? So what would be the din if you just take a regular sewing needle? I mean, that's obviously rounded under the microscope. Is that considered to be a rounded edge? And now as long as you move back and forth, you have enough lateral movement? Or do we say that there is a relationship of the width to the material that you're using, in which that level of sharpness will indefinitely need to puncture before it cuts? That's the problem. And then it'll just tear. So, what would be the din of just a needle? If I go back and forth using the sharp point of a needle, and I'm careful not to press, would that be okay? Or Marley, no, it will not be okay, because it's too sharp and it definitely tears. It's mivza buzza by definition. Okay, what about a machta dulishkefimai? How about a person who's working with leather? And there, his machat is essentially an awl. So there is a difference, because the wider the whatever material you're using, if he's a leather worker, then obviously it's not a very sharp awl. It's got a more of a curved surface. So machta dulishkefimai. Amalei, well, didn't the Mishnah say afilu kolshuhu? And we said kolshuhu, I mean, l'chora, kolshuhu is coming to be marbe, even a machta dulishkefi. No, I mean, that's kolshuhu. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's referring more to an isbo, which is more like a doctor's scalpel. I mean, maybe any type of a machta would not be good. But it says isma. I mean, it said an isma, didn't it? So then you've got to be adding something. It wouldn't be telling me the same thing twice. Isma, badi katanila. That's what it said. That was the example that you said. Afilu b'isma, right? No, that could be that the Mishnah is saying afilu kolshuhu, afilu b'isma. So in other words, I want to explain to you, when I say kolshuhu, I don't mean anything. I mean as long as it's at least like an isma, which is reasonable after all, because achinamim is stavra. These hagadaita machta de ushkefi. If you think that koshu, whatever it is, could be referring even to an awl that's used for making a hole in leather to put in, buckles or whatever, hashta machta de ushkefi shaya. So then, if that, which is even less than an isma, if that's kosher, so isn't an isma for sure kosher? I mean, why would I use the wrong example? If a machta dushkufi ashari is mombiboy, so then that would mean that we're using the word that is now less than the actual kosher that we used in the Mishnah. That doesn't make any sense. No, it does make sense, says Rabbi Nasha. It does make sense. Because the Ismail's got a problem, you see. Even though it may be longer and significantly longer than a machta dushkufi. However, being as it was apparently a minag that they used to have to make these ismals with little decorative horn-like things on the edges, so then that's our problem. And maybe we should be gozer, even if it's a flat ismal, that people might end up using an ismal sheyesh lo karnayim. So for that, the Mishnah tells us, kamash malan, even an ismal, only in order for us to understand that there's no gezerah, but an ismal certainly was not necessarily the smallest possible size. By the way, the Gra learns, and this is how he paskins in the Shulchan Aruch, that all of this is a reference to shechting an oaf, not shechting a behema, where over there we wouldn't allow you to use the oaf is a very small, the simonim are extremely small, and the ismal is significant in relationship to the simonim of the oaf. This brings us to Mr. Wright. It's the very Mr. Wright who is so doubtful of his being Mr. Wright that he's always putting himself down, and he had to put the word Mr. Wright on the actual screen so that he would be sure that he's Mr. Wright. but we call upon him this morning before he attempts his escape.
Wow, with such a build-up. So they like a miss.
Boy, we're gonna miss that while you're in the air.
While I'm in the air, maybe I'll try to get there. I'm not sure quite.
Yeah, you just better make sure Reb Yonah Bar Tachlifa is not under you during target practice. That's all I would say. That was the original solution to the drone issue. Yeah. So now, says the Mishnah, Nafla Sakin v'shachata. Suppose there was this knife, and it simply was hanging there, you know, on top of the kitchen counter, and the knife fell suddenly because the nail failed, and there was a little birdie right there, and it shechted the birdie just as well as Reb Yonah Bar Tachlifa. So what would that mean? Hafa pisha shachta kedarka, did perfectly kosher shchita, it would still be puzzle. Why is that? Because it says beferish in the Torah, v'zavachta v'achalta. So there we have our pasuk, which refers to Basar Taiva, ki yirchak mibcha hamakom, and it says, v'zavachta, mibkorcho, mitzonecho, etc., kasher tzivitecha, v'achalta. So v'zavachta, you have to do the zvicha. That means it needs to come from human force and not on its own falling off of our walls. Even though it's a perfect act of shita, mashata zoveach ata ochel. Only what you shecht, you are allowed to eat. Now, this appears to be saying that it's only because the nail fell. It failed, and therefore the knife fell. But suppose you had a knife that was on the table, and you were stretching, and you pushed the knife off of the table, and it fell right on top of that little chicken that was under the table, and it did a perfectly good shechita, mashma, that would be kosher, and that you do not need any kavana for shechita, but it needs to come from a human act, right? I mean, because otherwise, why take the case of nafla? You could have said even if he pila by accident. So apparently the only thing that we need over here is that the source of the energy or release of energy, remember we saw before that potential energy released is the equivalent of direct force. We had that with the case of the dam, and as opposed to the case of the train running down the maiden across the railroad tracks. So, Mantana. Now, the truth is, that sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Well, I should hope so, because we had exactly that question. We're back on the original Mishnah when we opened up the Masechet. And it would be kosher. And Rava said over there also, who's the Tana that says you don't need Kavana B'Shechita? And we said it's Rabbi Nasa. The whole thing, we're going to go through the whole thing again over here for some reason. But we already know this. And we're just going to point out that this is very repetitive. Why would we need twice to explain who the Tana is in our Masechet, who keeps insisting that you don't need a specific Kavana for Shechita? Who is that Tana? And once again, Rava says, it's Rabbi Natan. And once again, he brings his proof. The Tani Oshaya was the Zeira de Min Chavraya, the youngest boy of our Chavura. He said, Abraita, Zorak Sakilana Hatzaba Koto, since we're talking about William Tell, well, over here, we're not shooting arrows. We are practicing our knife throwing. Now, this is something that might take place in Alon's home. And you never know. Don't keep those chickens too close. You might get into questions of what the din is of Zorak Sakin Lenoatza Bekoto. I'd definitely keep the doggy away. So, actually, it depends. If you ask my wife, she'd say, no, the doggy should be watching very carefully, very closely. So, anyway, you're throwing knives. And all you're trying to do is hit the target in the wall. And there was your pet goat, and it was holcha v'shachta kedarka, and just did a perfectly kosher shechita on your goat. Rabbi Nathan says that's fine. Why is it fine? Apparently, even though you had absolutely no kavanah to do shrita, but you did have kavanah to throw that knife, and it's coming from a human, and therefore it's kosher, right? But is that the halacha? Hoshaya said it was the halacha. We saw that back at the beginning. So now all that remains to be explained is why are we repeating the entire sugya that we had at the beginning of the Masechet? But the Amra Ravat Chodesimna, Rav already said that. It's none. Remember, we had back on Daf Beis. The Kulam Sheshachatu V'Acherim Ro'inotam Shchitaton Kishera. This was talking about the Cheresh Shetimikatan. And it says that it's a kosher Shchita, even though they don't have Kavana. And we said over there exactly the same words we said over here. Ban Tana Delo Boy Kavana L'Shchita. And the same Rava said at that time that it's the same Rabbi Nassan, and he brought the whole story of Zeira and so on. I mean, of Shaya Zeira de Milchavraya. What are we going through this twice for? Oh, it's very different. Because had Rava only said to us the question of the beginning of the Masechet, where we have the Shchita of the Chereshet of the Katan, I would think that the din of the Chereshet of the Katan, Rabbi Nassan, is machshir, because there is a kavana to cut. It's true that he cannot have a actual technical kavana for Shchita, but he can have kavana to do the action of Shchita, which is cutting. And maybe that is sufficient. So he is mechavin l'shum chaticha ba'olam. He wants to cut. Ashenkin over here, the knife was just knocked over from the table by his accidental movement of his elbow, not realizing that he had knocked it off, whatever, right? So here there's no kavana whatsoever. So maybe there, even Rabbi Nassim would not have said that this is kosher. So, and if you're going to tell me here that this Mishnah is going out libe to Rabbi Nassim, I'd say, yes, okay, Rabbi Nassim holds that you need to have the act of a bendat, and as long as it's the act of a bendat, it's kosher. But how would that prove that he would have said that if it's a chereshet of a katan, it was not a bendat, that that would also be kosher? Hasam delo kasim mikoach bendat, over there, you can't even call it coming mikoach odam, because maybe the odam that we need is the odam who has that. So if Rava hadn't said, I wouldn't have known that Rabbi Nassan is matir over there also. So because of that, he wants to bring out that both situations are actually included, and as long as there was even a chaticha bi'alma, and even if it wasn't from a bendat, it would still be kosher. Itma. So now, question is, how far do we take this idea of the difference between, we got this very fascinating difference in levels. So you can have kavana for cutting something. You can have kavana for shechting something. You can have kavana for being yotze, the mitzvah in doing the shechita of something. And those are all completely different levels of kavanas. So our lowest level of all is the source of the energy, no kavana. Then we go to the kavana just to be cutting. It could be cutting the target so that the knife is supposed to be penetrating the target. We might need more. We might need kavana for cutting through simanim, as Tosis explains over here. We might need kavana if it's talking about kachim. Maybe we need even kavana l'shom, as we said, l'shem shisha dvarim, and so on. So when we talk about distinguishing between an act that has in it various issues, the purpose of the act, the actuality of the act, and the fact of the act. Let's imagine a situation like this. We have this woman who is Tmeya, she's a Nida, and she's walking over a bridge, and the bridge collapses, she falls into the stream under her and crawls out yelling. Does she still have to go to the mikveh, or was that a good tefillah? Well, I mean, there's several issues there. I mean, she didn't even want to get wet. So, I mean, what would be the din over there? enida she'ne'ensa v'tavla. So she hadn't gone yet into the mikveh, and there's two issues that we're going to have to decide. One is she allowed to eat truma? The other is she allowed to sleep with her husband? Now, one of those is nogea inyanim of chulin, her husband is chulin. One of them is nogea inyanim of kachim, because truma is our penultimate lowest level of kachim, the lowest being actually meiser sheni. So what would be the day? Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, well, she's allowed to sleep with her husband, but she's not allowed to eat truma. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, she is not allowed to sleep with her husband. Now, we're going to have to explain, of course, what the level of Nensa V'Tavla is. Right now, we're just making assumptions. When we get into the details, we're going to see that there are many different levels of what that Kavana might be. So, Amali Rav Reb Nachman, according to Rav, who says that she's allowed to sleep with her husband, but she can't eat truma. Does that make sense? I mean, truma is an iser if you eat truma. Betuma, it's an iser misa bidei shamayim. But sleeping with your husband is as a nida is much more chamur. That is an iser karet. So how does it make sense to say, according to Rav, that it's mutter for her she's considered to be Torah when it comes to an avon karet of sleeping with her husband, that's fine. But when it comes to eating truma, which is only of iser of mita b'dei shamayim, that shouldn't that for sure be kosher? Why did Rav say, no, she's not allowed to eat truma? Amalei, said Rav Nachman, what? There's no comparison. There are different dinim of kavana for chulin and for hegdish. Her husband is chulin. And therefore, we don't have a din of kavana for tefillah when it comes to chulin. Chulin lo boi kavana. Masha'enken, once you're talking about a real tefillah for actual going and eating kachim, then the Torah calls truma, it calls it the kodesh. So in that case, chulin does not need kavana, but truma does. Now, where do we get this from? How do you know that chulin has no requirement for kavana at all? Well, take a look at the Mishnah we had in Mikvaot. You have a gal. You have a wave. The wave was an enormous wave, splashed up on the ground, maybe 20 meters from the edge. This guy was sitting right there, reading his newspaper in his deck chair, and this wave goes all over him. Oh my gosh. A rogue wave, and he's soaked from head to toe. Now, if that wave had arba'im sa'ah in it, and it falls on a guy or on his kelim, they are all tahar. Now, last I heard, the kelim, they do not have any kavana at all. And last I heard, the gal doesn't have kavana at all. So nobody had any kavana. And these kelim are sitting there, and they were tamei, and now all of a sudden they're tor. How could that be? Nobody tevled them. So, apparently, my love, even though it does mention the Adam, it's Dafka putting in the Adam to note that he's no different than the kelim. Adam dumya de kelim. Just like the kelim are obviously don't have any kavona. Dolo mechavne. Of Adam Nami Loboi Kavana. So apparently, since we're just talking about Chulin here, there is no need for Kavana. But how do you know? Maybe it's talking about, I mean, you are the one who creates this lovely situation where the guy is calmly reading his newspaper and listening to his radio. Who says that that's what we're talking about? Maybe we're talking about a guy who says, "Woo, it's so cold, I can't go into that. I'll just wait until a wave comes along and is tevel me." Maybe that's what it's referring to. And maybe the kelim are actually dumya da adam. And the Adam is waiting for the gal, and the kelim, well, they're not waiting for the gal, but the Adam who brought his kelim down to be tevel, he's waiting for the gal. And this is like the classic, you know, new chassan, he doesn't want to get his toesies wet, but he figures, okay, as soon as the gal comes, they will become tor, and then I'll tell my dear, I did a perfect tefillah. Oh, thank you, thank you. And actually, it was all automatic. But how do we know that that's not the case? Dilma, Beosheva mitzapeaskinan, he is waiting for that wave. Ematayita leshagal, when is this wave going to come along and make us tar? And in fact, the kelim would be demid adam. Just like the adam has kavana for himself, and he needs kavana, the kelim, it's talking about that the adam was mechavin for those kelim, and therefore they're tar because of the kavanata adam. Kamekavinu adam. Now, if you ask me, but how could that be the case? If that's the case, there would be no chiddush involved. I mean, doesn't the Mishnah be telling you a chiddush? So isn't the chiddush the very fact that nobody had kavana? No. There's a very big chiddush over here. V'chi teima, you're going to ask me, what's the chiddush? B'yosheva mitzapef, the guy is waiting for the wave. Ma'ila meimra. So then there's no point in teaching me this halacha because it's obvious. I will tell you there's a big chiddush. Ma'u de teima. Ligzar mishum chardalit shel gishamim. What would be the din in a similar case where you've got this wave of rainwater, not of yam, and it's coming off of a mountain, you know? So it's a chardalit shel gishamim, and somebody says, well, wow, you know, my friend, he managed to do the tefillah when he went to the seashore, and he got it all done, and I can get it all done with this beautiful torrent that's gushing down from the mountain, and it's going to cover all my wife's new dishes, and then I don't have to go and get into the yam, so that should be kosher. And of course, that would not be kosher, because a chardalit shel gishamim is, well, what's the problem exactly of a chardalit?
Sorry, could you say that again?
What's the problem of a chardalit shel gishamim? Well, fascinatingly, Rashi says that you cannot be tovel in a chardalit shel gishamim because of Nitzuk and Katafras. Nitzuk and Katafras is not considered to be a chibur, which is a very strange thing to say is the psul of a chardalit shel gishamim. Rashi is saying that since you don't have 40 saw of water in one place, why not? Because the water is not attached, since it's flowing, whether it's flowing free, flowing through the air, flowing along the bottom, that whether it's a nitzuk through the air or it's a katafras, makes no difference. It is not going to be considered to be in a actual connected to each other. It's not a chibur. So don't you need 40 saw for a mikveh? To which Tosfos reacts violently. What in the world? A mikveh is not kosher if it's moving. That's the problem. Why are we talking about 40 sun? If you had 40 sun, the water was moving, it was dripping out of the mikveh, it would be kosher, also wouldn't be kosher. So why the heck does Rashi focus on nitzuk v'katafras? Okay, so we've got this fascinating question over here. Now imagine if we've got a mikveh at the bottom, and we've got a mikveh at the top, and we've got this flow in between. So the top of the mountain's got a mikveh, the bottom of the mountain's got a mikveh. If Gavi will turn aside, we'll be able to see that exactly behind him as he's, there you go. Look at that beautiful mayim. And in that case, you would say, maybe you've got 40 saw in one place on top, 40 saw in one place on the bottom, and now I'm connected to the 40 saw. So Rashi says, no, you're not connected because it's not bechubar. Anyway, fascinating that we should get into that review of the issues in the Mishnah, but let's get back to our story. Anyway,
that is Tosfos learn to be kosher with a gal?
Well, what about English, please.
Sorry, how does Tosfos learn the gal? As that's what he says. How does Tosfos learn the gal? The wave has been kosher.
A wave, as you know, comes from the sea, and the sea is always moving, and it has a din of a ma'ayan, and therefore a wave does not have to be still. That's the whole point. A bor is one thing, and a mayan is a different thing. So bor, mikvah, mayan, and mayan are both kosher. So the wave, the moment that the wave hits the ground, it is now a mikvah, and it is on the ground, and it is a perfectly kosher mikvah, and everything is fine. So if I would be gozer, Well, you can't do that because people will think that means you could use even moving rainwater, which you can't. Or here's the cutest of it, okay? Let's say you are a great surfer. Now, you want to go to the mikveh without ever getting into the water. So what do? You surf right through a wave, riding the wave. Oh, man, upside down. I mean, it's amazing. And you were completely surrounded by water. You've even got the cameras attached to you to prove you're surrounded by water. But you didn't get wet. Is that a good tefillah or not? You were in the ocean surrounded by water. Amazing. So you might think that would be kosher. And this is a surfer's mikveh. And therefore, we're afraid that if we allow you to be tevil in the head of the wave, you would actually be tevil in the arc of the wave while you're doing your surfing. And that would not be kosher. Kamash mandalo gazrina. So the chiddush would be, we do not make such a gezeiros. Well, how do you know it's not good to be tevil in a mikveh while you're surfing? Where does it say you can't do a mikveh inside of the kippah? Because it's a braita. The braita says, matbilin b'roshin ve'ein matbilin b'chipin she'ein matbilin ba'avir. You cannot do tefillah in the air. So I don't care how you read it, that you're surrounded by water, but that's not called tefillah. Well, how is that immersed in water? Can you tell me? So that's air. And since you cannot do tefillah in the air, so you cannot actually be yotze. I mean, this would be like really a convenient way to do tefillah if you're a surfer. You could always actually throw your kelim. Your wife might not like, do not try it while your wife is around. But like you could take her bone china, throw it right through the kippah of the wave and have your friend catch it on the other side. And then that would be the tefillah. And it never even got wet. How do you like that? But you cannot do that because it's not able to be a tefillah if it's not actually immersed in water. Okay, so anyway, we don't have a raya. That means that we cannot prove, since it might be talking about that the guy was waiting for the wave to come, and the main chiddush is that we don't make a gzeira, that maybe you'll actually try to surf for tefillah. And okay, and then of course you could tell the Rosh Hashiva, we spent the whole day surfing, you understand. I just went down to the mikveh, Rebbe, no problem. Like the old Santa Cruz days back in California. So anyway, where do we know that chulin lo boi kavana? That's not. This we know from Makshirin. So remember, we had that Mishnah in Makshirin we learned together. And that's Makshirin we learned together. Note that Mr. Wright won't even show his face when we talk about Makshirin we learned together. He withdraws, right? And tries to persuade everybody that he's right. Uh-huh. So what we learned together over there was that Peirot Shenafilu L'Toch HaMatamayim. So we had, let's say, a bunch of grapes that fell by accident into a water channel in the middle of the field, and that's where they used to irrigate. So somebody who had yadayim tmeot, and needed the tilat yadayim, he sticks his hand into that water, and he takes them out of the water, his hands become tahor. Wow. Why? Because tfilat yadayim. Remember, you don't need to do netilat yadayim. You can actually also do tfilat yadayim. So he was tovel his hands in that water. And he certainly only had intended to take out the grapes from the water. And the peirot, enan b'chiyuta. The peirot, remember, in order to be mukshel kabel tuma, you would want that peirot to have, maybe not the peirot, but you would have wanted that to be there for the peirot. And over here, they fell in on their own, and therefore there was no ki yitan dumya l'chi yitain, because it's spelled ki yitain. So you need, on some level, you need the person who owns these peirot wanted that water either to be there or wanted it to be on the peirot later. But if bishvil sheyutchu, If you stuck your hands into that water in order to wash your hands, and therefore you would make them tor, so then your hands are torot because you had in kavana to be metayer them, and then the perot are bechiyutan because even though you didn't want it to fall in, remember ba'alokha that we had a makshirin, if sofo is l'ratzon, that's enough to be makshir l'kabel tumah. So what do we see? That where we were talking about stam chulin, and not in order to be metayer your yadayim, for stam chulin, it would be yadav tahorot, even though you had absolutely no intention whatsoever to be washing your hands. All you wanted was to take out the perot. Problem is that Reb Nachman is not really consistent, because we have a Mishnah that says not like that. Eisvei Ravel Reb Nachman. How can you say that you do not require any kavana for chulin? Look at the whole Mishnah in Chagiga, remember, where we talked about all the different levels of kavana. So we said, somebody who was toval for purposes of chulin, and huchzak lechulin, he had actually had kavana and had certified his tefillah for chulin, osur lemaaser, he's still not considered to be tor enough to eat maaser sheni. Now, why did it say huchzak? So you see that even though it's for chulin, you need huchzak. So apparently, huchzak in, lo huchzak lo. And according to Reb Nachman, you shouldn't need any kind of huchzak, because you don't need any kavana. It should be just like your hands fell in. It should be perfectly kosher. No, says Reb Nachman, it doesn't say here that you need huchzak. It's saying even if you were huchzak, so you specifically wanted to go to the mikveh because you eat your chulin b'tayra. So you put your hands into the mikveh in order to be able to eat your chulin b'tayra. Nonetheless, even though you mamish had kavana, it's not good enough. And it's still osur lemaaser. That's the chiddush. Eisvei. Okay. How about the Mishnah itself later says, taval v'lo huchzak ki'ilu lo tava. If you didn't have any chazaka in that tefillah, it's as if you weren't tovo at all. How do you explain that? I mean, that seems to be saying, my love, kilo lo taval klo. If you didn't have any kavana, you didn't go to the mikveh in any sense, even for chulin. So you see, even for chulin, you need to have chazak. Nah, says Reb Nachman, it means kilo lo taval for the first stage, which is meiser. Kilo lo taval la maaser is what it means. Aval taval chulin, which doesn't even need chazak. The Mishnah is only coming to talk about the dinim of the type of tefillah that requires kavana. So that starts with meiser. And then it goes through the various levels. So if you were tovah for chulin, you're not good enough for meiser. You were tovah for meiser, you're not good enough for truma. You were tovah for truma, you're not good enough for kodesh, and so on. And it goes through all of the milas up to the dinim of para, remember? Okay, so that's all it means. But if he was tava l'chulin, then everything would be fine. And that would be considered to be tefillah without any kavana. So Rava thought that this doesn't really make sense. And that Rav Nachman was saying, look, you can't disprove me 100%, but he was just being dochem, you know? But then he found out that it actually says exactly that in a braita on this Mishnah. Nafak dok vashkach, he went out, and he looked around and found, in fact, the braita that said, tova v'lo uchzak, mutter l'chulin. So you see, you don't need any uchzak. You're mutter l'chulin, and you're only osur l'maaser. And Reb Nachman said that exactly as the halacha, therefore, that is the way to understand the Mishnah, exactly the way that the braita is explaining it. Fine. Now, let's think about Rabbi Yochanan's din. He said that the woman who fell in, well, we think it means it fell in, the Isha Nida is muteret We had said, and Rabbi Yochanan said that she is actually asura, even for her husband. So Amalei Abaya to Rabbi Yosef. Well, I mean, doesn't this show that Rabbi Yochanan is wrong? Because if you've shown us, as Rav Nachman has just done, that you do not need kavana for chulin, so why wouldn't that nida be kosher for her husband, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is against the Mishnah? Omar Lei, you're absolutely right. This Mishnah is against Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Yochanan, he was going to, according to another sheet of Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan, who the Amak Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef. The Tanya here is the Brayta in which Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef says that, in fact, you need to have kavana, because it says in the Pasuk, v'chubas. So now, we're talking over there about tzaras, and this is talking about tzaras habegadim. So it says, habeged, or hashasi, or ha'erev, etc., asher techabes v'sar me'amanega, v'chubas shenit v'taher. So remember, we're talking about two completely different things there. The first word, techabes, means you've got to scrub it down and see if the nega comes off. Then if the nega comes off, after techabes v'sar me'amanega, v'chubas shenit, that's referring to putting it into a mikvah. They're two completely different elements of kibbutz. Then why do you say v'chubas shenit exactly? So ma tamad lomar shenit. I mean, it's clear that you just said v'chibes and sara nega and then v'chubas. Obviously it's shenit. Therefore, the whole point in this pasuk is to compare the tichboset shniya le tichboset harishona. It's comparing the mikvah to the original work at scrubbing, and in the original work of scrubbing, it said vitziva hakohen v'chibsu. So therefore, if it's dafka with the kavana that the Kohen was mitzaveh, so then matich boset rishona ladat, what that means is that the Tereb was insisting that the washing out of the nega has got to be done upon the tzivoy of a Kohen, which means that there was specific kavana to do tichboset. Therefore, we use the word shenit, and Reb Alon is looking a little too relaxed in his ish tachat te'enato v'tachat kafno. We want to have him fully present. What is he dreaming of? Not having to leave this beautiful place. That's what he's dreaming of. And that he can easily put into effect by a mere determination that so shall it be, as Rat Hashem. Now, what it's telling me is that makish tichboset shniyah letichboset rishona. Ma tichboset rishona has to be ledat, as it says beferish in the pasuk, v'tziva kohen. Af tichboset shniyah, which is going to the mikvah, has to be ledat. And if the beged that had been washed and now no longer has a nega falls into the water, says Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, you see from here, if it fell into the water, it is not going to be tahor. Now, you'll ask me, well, if it is a true hekesh, so then imala halan bina da'at kohen, afkan bina da'at kohen, so then why don't we need specifically for the kohen to be the one who has kavana to do the tefillah on the beged when it's kubash shenit? Because the first time it was the da'at kohen, it says v'tziva kohen. Tamud lomar, that's why it adds the word unnecessarily, v'taher. V'taher tells me under all circumstances it would be v'taher. And therefore, you don't need the dot of the Kohen at all. It would be kosher even without the dot of the Kohen. Anyway, so according to Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, you do need kavana even for the tefillah for chulin. Now the question is, was it really true what Rabbi Yochanan said? Did he say that you need even for chulin, you need to have kavana? Umiyomar Rabbi Yochanan, hachi? V'yomar Rabbi Yochanan, don't we have that general halacha? That halacha, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is always kistam mishnah. And we learned in a stam mishnah that, you don't need kavana. And how is he going, therefore, according to Rabbi Yonatan? I don't understand. That would be going like a das yochid against the Stam Mishnah. How could he pass him like Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef? What's the Stam Mishnah? Our Mishnah. What does it say? Nafla sakin v'shachata, afa pisha shachata kedarka psula. What does it say in the Mishnah clearly? That if a knife fell on its own, it's a posel shchita. And remember that we were medayik, ve'avinaba. You see that the only reason that that shchita is posel is because it fell on its own. But if it came from an adam, and he had no kavana, he was just mopulent, he pilahu, it would be kosher without any kavana. So how could Rabbi Yochanan say that you need to have kavana for tefillah if you don't need kavana for the shechita in the case of chulin? The amrina, and remember, we said, man tana de loboy kavana l'shechita, who is the Stam Mishnah going according to? And Rava said, it's going according to Rabbi Nassan, and we see that the whole idea is the lo tzarech loboy kavana l'shechita. So now, how could you say on the one hand that Rabbi Yochanan is insisting that you need kavana for chulin, and that he's going according to Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, and on the other hand say that according to Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'stam mishnah? Nah. Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef himself would have agreed to this mishnah. This is not a stam mishnah against Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef. B'shchita? Even Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef is moda that that would be the halacha. And that you do not need any kind of kavana. Why? Because since the Torah was megala to us a special halacha for kachim, namely, misasek bekachim is pasul, another gavi rule. You cannot be involved in doing something else and be involved mitasek. You're busy doing something else, and meanwhile, you ended up shechting. That's dafka adin in kachim, but that implies michlal. If the Torah needed to teach us that din by kachim, so then it's clear if we're not talking about kachim, then tchulin alone would not require kavana, and you could even be misasik. So even though Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef holds, and Rabbi Yochanan holds like him, that for something like anida to be tahora, you do need kavana, but when it comes to shechita, there's a special gzeres hakasuv that says, only kachim is posel when there's no kavana, but chulin is completely kosher. And the Rabbanan? What about the Rabbanan? We're argued over there in Rabbi Shaya. They say that if you were going to throw this knife into the target practice, it wasn't kosher. Why do they explain that? It says you only need kavana for kachim. No, wait a minute. Excuse me. Remember, we started off this discussion by pointing out that there are different levels. So, nihi de lo be'inat kavana l'zvicha, you don't, 100%, you do not need kavana for shechita. But you do need kavana for the act. You need kavana for cutting through the simanim, you know. And therefore, it would be, if you threw the knife into a wall target, that is not a kavana for chaticha of simanim. That's just a kavana for chaticha ba'alma. So now we have the act coming mikayachada, the act of cutting coming mikayachada, the act of cutting simanim coming from the kayachada, and the kavana of cutting the simanim l'shem shchita, which is necessary only for kachim. Omar Rava, well, then I gotta tell you. I mean, I think Rav Nosson has absolutely scored at 100% above the Rabbanan over here, because what they're saying, I mean, where do they get this from? That, I mean, it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that kiyirchak mipcha hamakom v'chatachta. You know, it says v'zavachta. Now, either it means v'zavachta or it doesn't. So, mikti v'chatachta. It says v'zavachta. So, ibe inan kavana l'chaticha, if you're telling me that you need to have kavana for cutting, I mean, you're getting it from the word for zvicha, so then that means you need kavana for zvicha. And if you don't need kavana for zvicha, where the heck do you come off with this new idea? Well, you still need a kavana for chaticha. That doesn't make sense. L'chaticha nami lo liboy. And therefore, I think that the Rabbanan over here is a kvetch, and the way that actually Rabbi Nosson is learning it is absolutely clear. Now, this machlokes is going to have much impact on the question of how we understand the case of the Nina, because now there's different levels of what we would mean when we say this Nida was Nensa. I mean, Nensa can mean a lot of different things now that we're saying there's so many different ways to understand an action. Well, I guess we'll have to do that last piece tomorrow. It's going to take us a bit, and it would be a shame. It's so sweet. It would be a shame to do it fast. So, Bezrat Hashem, to be continued.